It's certainly a great pleasure to be with you this afternoon, and I feel like we're going in warp speed because we're going from Alaska, the cold of Alaska, to the heat of Laredo, Texas. I'd like to acknowledge the presence of my colleague and co-author, Ms. Kayla Castillo, who is here with me today. And the purpose of our presentation is to share the lessons we learned through an H1N1 vaccination program in Laredo, Texas. It was sponsored jointly by two entities, the City of Laredo Health Department and Laredo ISD. In Anchorage, I'm seeing that we use lots of different community agencies. In Laredo, we just use two, the school district and the health department. Our focus is on the importance of collaborative efforts, efficient systems, and factors that affect student participation rates. Let's see. We have no financial relationships to disclose. So for you to understand a little bit about our collaborations, we need to tell you a bit about our city. We are located directly on the Texas-Mexico border. If you stand in downtown Laredo, you can look right across the bridge and see our sister city of Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. This map shows you our crucial location on the NAFTA trade corridor. We're the United States' largest inland port, with 40% of all U.S. imports moving across our four international bridges annually. But with that comes a lot of biologic vulnerability. We have over 10,000 pedestrians and 17,000 vehicles going across our bridges every single day. Certainly, this makes us vulnerable to disease threats. Any health hazard in Mexico exists in Laredo as well. TB is a big threat for us. So are food and water and vector-borne diseases. And that goes without mentioning also the very real threat of bioterrorism, because we're a major gateway into the United States. When we look at our school district, Laredo is the area that's in beige. Our school district is represented in red and covers the central and oldest part of Laredo. The western boundary of our school district is the Mexican border. We are only 13 square miles in area, but we've got incredible population density with 1,800 students per square mile. We're uniformly Hispanic, uniformly economically disadvantaged, and health access is a major issue for our students. We've got a binational population, and by what I mean there is that our students live in the U.S. during the week, and on weekends go home to Mexico, then return back on Monday morning. So that presents challenges as well. So because of our unique location and our vulnerability to health threats, our school district and the health department established collaborations long before H1N1 emerged. We started in 2002 working on public health emergency preparedness. Early on, we established memoranda of understanding, allowing us to serve as a pod, as a point of dispensing for meds and vaccines. Since 2006, we participated every year in Operation Lone Star, which I'll refer to as OLS. It's a point of dispensing exercise, bringing state and local and military personnel together at one of our campus sites. And you can see in the pictures some of those participants. We test our capacity to mass vaccinate and treat large populations. We learn and we practice the incident command system. During this past year, we treated an average of 900 clients daily, and our exercise went on for a week. In addition, we developed and used since 2003 Argus One, which is an early event detection system. School nurses electronically enter cases based on student symptoms, and Argus One alerts them when the symptoms suggest a notifiable condition or syndrome. We then submit cases electronically to the health department so that both entities have access to real-time data and disease trend. And of course, for years, our school nurses and the City of Laredo Health Department have had long-standing partnerships. Through the partnership, school nurses acquired practice and experience in responding to disease outbreaks. Because we're on the border, we do have active cases of TB come up, pertussis come up, occasional measles. So we've acquired the skills for disease investigation and vaccine clinic management. So into this picture steps H1N1. And when it emerged, the spotlight certainly was on Mexico. Our bridges remained open, and the movement between our populations continued despite the CDC travel warning. We quickly mobilized tools that we had developed through previous efforts, and school nurses started using Argus One to report cases of ILI at each campus. It took a while, as it did in many other states, for vaccines to start arriving, especially in shipments large enough to start our school-based vaccination clinics. But while we waited, we started planning our strategies, relying heavily on what we had learned in Operation Lone Star in OLS. Using Argus One data, we started sequencing the schools for vaccination. We began by vaccinating schools with the highest reported ILI rates. Our first large shipment got to us on November 9th, and we started our vaccinations on November 18th. In Texas, it took a while for those shipments to continue to arrive in Laredo, but as more vaccine was received, additional campuses were scheduled. We were able to schedule clinics 3 days after a vaccine shipment arrived, and we finished all clinics by January 21st. So what did it take to run these clinics and to be efficient? We learned we really needed to put our school and health staff together and have defined roles for each one of these groups. Based on our OLS exercises, we understood the importance of standardization, standard logistics, supplies, training, and communication tools. We used the incident command system with standard roles and responsibilities for each person. Here is the vaccine clinic setup that we used at all of our campuses. A family entered a gym. You can see that at the top right of the screen, and moved towards a waiting area. We divided our zones into three different sections: screening, vaccination, and documentation, with persons moving from waiting area to screening, where vaccine consent forms were signed, on to vaccination, finally having school and vaccine records documented, and exiting. One-way flow was critical in our setups. With this program, we were able to vaccinate a high volume of people in a short time. Our clinics were 2 hours in length. We vaccinated 193 persons on average per hour using 12 screeners and 10 vaccinators. When we had a really good campus turnout, we were able to achieve rates of 295 persons per hour using that staff. We immunized a total of 9,656 persons, including students, school staff, and community. Two-thirds of our persons immunized were students. We learned that we could do this by using skills we learned through Operation Lone Star. We could get clinics quickly set up, and we could vaccinate high volumes of persons in a short time. I'd like to shift now to sharing factors with you that affected our student participation rate. As we started scheduling our clinics, three questions about the clinic logistics came up. Where should we hold the clinics, at what time, and should we pre-consent students or not? We really didn't have prior experience in determining which of these answers would lead to optimal participation rates. Three models emerged. Model one was used at elementary schools. Parents came to the school during the school day, consented on-site, and were with their child during vaccination. Because it was hard to unite students and their parents during the school day because of schedules at secondaries, we eliminated Model 1 from secondary school use. Model 2 was also used at both elementaries and secondaries. Remember, we're only 13 square miles, so some of our schools are just one or two blocks apart from each other. So these clinics in Model 2 joined two geographically proximate schools. We held the clinics after school. Again, the parents consented on-site and were with their children during vaccination. Our last model was used only at secondaries. Students, again, were vaccinated at their home campus during the school day. Parents pre-consented, and so they didn't have to be present during student vaccinations. The three models resulted in really different participation rates. Model 1, used at elementary schools, averaged 42% of student population vaccinated. Model 2 had a rather dismal participation rate of 15%, and Model 3 yielded 22% participation rate. We get a little bit better picture if we segregate these models by campus levels. As we look at elementary schools, we used both Models 1 and 2. Clearly, Model 1 was preferable. Model 1, again, used homeschools during the school day with parent pre-consent. In our secondary schools, Model 2 did dismally as well. Model 3 did rather well. These again were at home campus during school day. So those two factors seem to help, holding this clinic during the school day at a home campus. Model 2 after school clinics held jointly between two campuses really yielded low student participation rate, and I can tell you we'll never use that again. Another interesting thing that emerged as we looked at this was the drop in participation rate as we moved from elementary schools to middle schools to high schools. So that was very interesting to us and a challenge for the future. By disaggregating our data a little bit more, we learned participation rate was affected by additional factors. For example, if we looked only at elementary school morning clinics, we can see that participation rate slowly decreased as the pandemic urgency waned from November towards the end of January. On several dates, we held a Model 1 vaccine clinic both in the morning and in the afternoon. This graph shows a comparison of the participation rates. Parental preference was certainly for afternoon clinics. So what did we learn from our experience? Well, we learned existing collaborations certainly are crucial in a community like ours. Previous practice with large-scale exercises allowed us to mobilize without losing time or missing a beat. We already had all of those strategies in place. We knew incident command system, we had electronic surveillance, and school nurses were prepared and experienced. We found that school-based clinics are effective during public health emergencies. Community members trust school sites and readily accept services offered at schools. This is really important, particularly in Laredo, when many of our parents do not have legal residency status, and schools are safe zones for them. They served as access points for our medically underserved population, and lots of our folks lack transportation, so this was an important site for them as well. Efficient vaccination through the use of standard clinic setups was certainly another lesson for us. Our standard clinic plan, communication and training tools, and use of our incident command system allowed us to vaccinate high volumes of persons in a short time. And finally, different clinic models affect participation rates. Clinics at home campuses during the school day were helpful. Pre-consenting secondary students was a good model in secondary schools. And scheduling all campuses as quickly as possible relative to the health threat or the pandemic was important. Where do we go from here? Well, the programs that we used in H1N1 certainly can be applied on annual flu vaccine clinics or during community disease outbreaks. And in fact, we are using them this year with our annual flu program. We've also learned that as we set up the clinics, we need to select for preferred models. And in the future, we need to explore methods to enhance our secondary school participation. By providing our school-based H1N1 vaccination programs, our families and community received needed protection. We were successful, and we learned lessons that will serve us very well in the future. It's our hope that Laredo's experience can benefit your communities as well.